June 19th, meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to Order. For those in the audience that might be here for House Bill 3088, we will be carrying that over to our next hearing, which will be tomorrow. And I think everything else is on our schedule we're planning to hear today. So I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 364B.
That is going to be...
And we'll stand at ease for a moment while we wait for our guest celebrity committee administrator.
Well, theme music, Madam Chair.
Right.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. Senate Bill 364B is a measure that would require the Department of Human Services to develop a policy that supports and promotes self-determinations for persons receiving mental health services. It has two major components. The first would be to establish a 15 to 25 member Mental Health Consumer Advisory Council to advise the Director of the Department of Human Services on the provision of mental health services. The second major component would require that consumers comprise at least 20% of the membership of all task forces, commissions, advisory groups, and committees which primarily relate to mental health or addictions issues. There is a B7 amendment that would be before the committee. That amendment would insert one word on the second page of the bill. It would insert the word primarily on line 5. So line 5 would read under the amendment, primarily relate to persons with mental health addiction issues. The bill does not have a revenue or a fiscal, and that would apply to the B7 amendment as well. That would not trigger fiscal. And just two other components. The measure would, in the membership, the 20% requirement would apply to all state, local, and special government bodies. And those bodies would also be subject to the public meetings law, which is ORS 19263.
Thank you, Andy. And my understanding is this was sent to us to adopt this clarifying amendment, but we do have three people signed up, so we'll call them all together. First, Don Bischoff, appearing for Senator Morissette, the sponsor of the bill, and also let's call forward Madeline Olson and Ann Taylor. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum, committee members. I'm just here primarily to answer questions. This bill was headed for the House floor after being sent out of the Human Services Committee. There was apparently some concern by some House member or members that this bill might somehow apply to committees of the legislature, which would then require a 20% membership of people who have received or are receiving mental health or addiction services.
Chris, some would say that that's probably a component of every legislative committee.
I will decline to comment on that. Anyhow, so Representative Gelser's office had the D7 amendment adopted, or D7 amendment drafted to clarify that this deals only with committees, task force, et cetera, that are dealing primarily with mental health and addiction issues.
Thank you, Don. And Madeline? Or?
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. I'm Madeline Olson. I'm the Deputy Assistant Director for Addictions and Mental Health for the Department of Human Services, and we're here in support of Senate Bill 364. You have my written testimony. We have no problem with the minor adjustment amendment. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony, and please go ahead, Ann.
Hi, my name is Ann Taylor, and I'm here by the skin of my teeth. Thank you for listening to me. I would be like a consumer survivor, although I don't consume the drugs, but it's cost me plenty in the system. The big thing that people with mental health need is compassion, and it's lacking in the system, totally lacking. We have Iraqi veterans and from Afghanistan coming back with mental health issues, and they sometimes get into substance abuse as well. And it's well needed that we have representation of all the groups involved on various levels, and I really would urge you to consider it, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for this panel of witnesses? Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
I just wanted to thank Don for that tie. It kind of just wakes up everybody and we're ready to go.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, all of you, for your testimony. And I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 364 and open a work session on Senate Bill 364.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Buck.
Madam Chair, I move the B-7 amendments for Senate Bill 364.
Okay, Representative Buckley moves the -B7 amendments to Senate Bill 364. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, amendment is adopted. And Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 364 as amended to the floor with a pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves Senate Bill 364 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Shauna, welcome back. And it seems like we're back in our mode, our usual mode here. Please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Motion carries. And I think Representative Gelser was assigned to carry this bill previously, so we will ask her to carry it on the floor since she brought this amendment forward. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 364.
You did great. Good job.
And let's see. I think I will.
You don't have 38 on there either.
No. I do over here.
Open a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 19.
I didn't know it was coming.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, SCR 19 honors Les Schwab, 1917-2007.
Okay, and I think there will probably be considerable discussion of this on the floor when it gets there. I do not know if anybody has come here today to talk about SCR 18, but yes. Oh, I said 19 and I was looking at 18. You're right. We're on SCR 19. Yes, Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, I think we're all aware that Les Schwab has had a significant impact on our state, on its economy, on the growth of he's actually changed an entire industry with his business model. He's a great Oregonian, done a lot for the state, and I think it's appropriate at this time that the legislature honor him in this way, and I would move adoption of Senate Concurrent Resolution 19.
To the floor
with a due adopt.
Representative Berger moves SCR 19 to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, Shauna, please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. And as it looks like Representative Riley is the House Chief Sponsor of this, we'll ask him to carry it on the floor.
Okay.
And I'll close the work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 19.
So Riley has to run out to his desk to carry the bill, right?
Okay, I'll open a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 18. And I see that Senator Brown's staff is in the room. Did you wish to testify on this?
No.
Okay. So this is a...
Madam Chair, SCR 18A congratulates the team of Portland 7th graders known as Pig Mice for winning the 2007 championship at the first Lego League World Festival, SCR 18.
Madam Chair, can we ask the administrator to say that word again?
Lego.
Okay, and this actually is a team that came from Southeast Portland, the Brooklyn neighborhood, so we are very proud of them, and that's why it's before us. So we're in a work session, members.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move that the I'm trying to look for the words on this one. that second resolution 18 be sent to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves SCR 18 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
It's one that specifies as 18A.
18A.
Go pig mice.
Go pig mice.
Okay, Shauna, please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. And since the pig mice are from my district, I will carry this on the floor and try to say pig mice as many times as possible.
Greatly appreciated that.
I'll close the work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 18.
We've got the controversial bills out of the way.
Right.
Pig mice bill.
We actually are waiting for Representative McPherson on Senate Bill 248, so I think we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 717. Hi, Sandy. Welcome back to the Elections Committee.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Would you like to tell us about Senate Bill 717?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 717B requires the Board of Medical Examiners to appoint a scope of practice review committee to regulate the health profession when requested to review proposed changes to the scope of practice for a healthcare profession. It also requires the committee to report those results of the proposed review to the board, and it requires the board to forward that committee report to the Legislative Assembly and the governor. This has a sunset date of June 30th, 2012. You should have in your packet a fiscal impact statement on the fee engrossed. And we also have several amendments before us that I believe certain individuals will speak to. And I apologize, you have a B9, but this morning we got a B13. That, too, is from Senator Mona Sanderson. I am anticipating that the B13 replaces the B9. And there's Senator Mona Sanderson there.
Great. I don't actually see the B13, though. Do we have it in
there? It's in your packet you got this morning.
Yeah.
We
also have a B11.
But I have an extra one, Madam Chair.
We have a B11, too.
Madam Chair, underneath your green sheet, right on her desk.
Just a minute, Senator, we're getting organized here.
I don't know.
Do other members have a B13?
I have a
B13.
I
don't
have
a
B13.
No, it's not.
B9, 11, and 13.
Looks like we have a copy of it, so maybe we can get a few more copies.
You were calling now.
That's right.
B11, 9, 13.
Bingo. Where's my prize?
Typical day, the Rules Committee, Senator.
Senator Mona Sanderson is here with us, and welcome to the Elections, Ethics, and Rules Committee. Yes. And I think the staff will make sure everybody has a copy of this, so please go ahead and tell us about this bill.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Mona Sanderson from the Fairview, Gresham, Troutdale, and Wood Village area, and I'm delighted to talk to you about three little words today, and that scope of practice. The President of the Senate and I at the beginning of the session thought that we should have a different way of handling our scope of practice issues in this building because the battles are raging between chiropractors and physical therapists. It could be chiropractors versus or psychologists versus psychiatrists. It could be physical therapists versus occupational therapists. It's getting bigger and bigger, and the issues are becoming more and more complex. And so we thought that we could have a very simple process where there would be a review committee that would review applications with proponents, opponents, and neutral parties at the table. And so I want you to only consider the dash 11s and the dash 13s at this point. When it passed out of the Senate 29-0, we had the Board of Medical Examiners as the convener. And since that time, it has been brought to my attention that there is a national effort by the American Medical Association to have nurse practitioners become a part of under the American Medical Association. And so that is, I think, the main reason why there is such an uproar about this bill, even on a national level. And so that's why the Dash 13s have been crafted. It takes the convener away from the Board of Medical Examiners and puts it into the Oregon, into an institute. And the institute, you will hear Dr. David Goldberg speak regarding the institute that this would be put in. But basically what it does, it would bring, when an application comes to DHS, they would then send out a notice to everybody, whether it's all the boards, all of the education workforce people, the associations, and they would meet within 30 days of the application and decide who. We review the nominating process and then make recommendations to the institute on who they would like to serve on this committee. Then, within 90 days, this committee would need to come up with a decision. Not a decision, but a report. The original bill listed pretty focused on scope of practice. That was another issue that the nurse practitioners came to talk to me. They were very concerned. And they brought me a report that they said, Lori, this is a very good report. And so I incorporated the wordings from that report into the bill. And if you look on page 2, line 21 on, this committee needs to conduct the review, and everything should have a basis founded on an established history of the scope of practice within the profession, a relationship with the education and training of practitioners in the scope of practice, supporting clinical evidence based on research that the proposed change promotes access to quality health care and benefits the public by managing the evolving concepts of disease and disability, standards of care, infection, control rate, cost effectiveness, analysis, and benchmarking data, and appropriate regulatory environment that can manage modifications to the scope of practice. Any change needs to better protect the public and enhance consumer access. It needs to reflect the evolution of the ability of each healthcare discipline, and it really does must recognize the inevitability that there's going to be overlapping scope of practice, and it definitely needs to focus on patient safety and public protection. So we truly believe that with the complex issues that are coming before us, and healthcare is big business now, very big business, and everybody wants their market share. And it will help us as legislators if we had at least a review process of the people who are for and against a proposed change to meet and come up with a report that they would then bring to us in the legislature. I've tried to address in the 13s the very, very great concerns regarding the nurse practitioners. And in fact, I talked with them last night, and I know they would really like to have the Dash 11s. And the Dash 11s are a task force to study this issue. It is not my preference, just because we can talk this to death, and it's pretty straightforward on. We just, as far as I'm concerned, this review committee is a task force because they would be addressing the issues of the proposed scope of change. Another issue that the nurse practitioners and nurses wanted was the, and which is not reflected in the Dash 13s, is to have a sunset or a repeal in 2 years rather than 4 years. So I am open to questions. I think it's very straightforward, and truly it has evolved into addressing the concerns of the nurse practitioners. And I think it's really important for you all to understand it has been an extreme struggle for nurse practitioners to expand their scope of practice. And it is because of physicians and turf territory. I'll be very open. I think you should understand that there's always these turf battles. And if I had known this, it would never have been put in BME to begin with. But it was, because the concern, there were concerns addressed, but not to the level that happened when the bill got over here. So we have definitely addressed those concerns in the Dash 13s, and I'm very open, if this bill is sent to Ways and Means, to make sure that we change the sunset or the repeal date within 2 years, so we can address it next session to see how it worked. And it is not mandatory. This is voluntary. And I think that's the beauty of it also.
Thank you, Senator. And I see Senator Courtney is here, and I believe Representative Maurer, you were here on this bill as well. Would you like to come forward, too? Senator Courtney, standing.
Chair, Rosa Donovan, members, my fellow legislators, just a show of support. I never realized this idea would become as interesting as it's become. And I guess you know the history of it. I've been in the building so long, I struggle with scope of practice more than perhaps I'd struggle with K through 12 funding. To be frank with you, that's almost a misstatement. So,
Senator Courtney, I know you need no introduction.
Peter Courtney, 2925 Island View Drive, Northeast 973, State Senate District 11. So anyway, I'm just here to. I almost want to apologize to you. I'm sorry this thing has caused such a difficult situation, but it really was an attempt to try to make our lives a little better informed when it comes to scope of practice issues. That's basically it. We've worked very hard at it, and I've actually put myself on two committees. One of them was the good committee that Senator Laurie Montes-Hanson chairs. So that's all I'll say, because we're under the gun here. I just wanted to be down here and show my support for this bill. Appreciate any work you might do on it. We're open to amendments, right? We've been working on this and working on this. So with that, I'll just be still, Chair Rosenbaum and my fellow legislators.
Thank you. Representative Maurer.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Representative Ron Maurer, House District 3, serving Josephine County. And I'm here in support of the 13th amendments. And like President Courtney just stated, I'm here primarily for support, just so that it's on the record. I own a small rural health clinic. My wife is a nurse practitioner, and scope of practice issues are significant to the practice of our clinic. And Oregon is so progressive that the practice in our local community is not caught up to the laws that we already have on the books. And being up here as a freshman, it's apparent that scope of practice issues are overwhelming in their emotion, and that we need to get back to a more rational way of addressing this over a period of time rather than just a knee-jerk reaction in front of the committee. And so the 717 is a great idea. Its time is long overdue, and I support it wholeheartedly.
Thank you all for your testimony. Any questions for these witnesses?
Representative Maurer, you clearly said you were in support of the A13. Could Senator Montes-Hanson and Senator Courtney just clarify in terms of the amendments?
The A13s,
B13s,
basically have the Oregon healthcare workforce be the convener. In the bill, it's listed as an institute. They would be the convener. They would make the recommendations. They'd be the convener of a group of people and assist appointing that group of people to discuss and review and address the concerns regarding a scope of practice change. And it is interesting. I have gotten emails like you wouldn't believe. And it is from nurse practitioners. And when the original bill is very scary, and I can understand that to nurse practitioners. But I have a number of emails that I have received in response, and it is interesting that they say, oh, thank you for explaining this to me, Lori. I can see why you would want to address scope of practice change in a methodical way, just like we do the practice of medicine. So I've had several that once I explain what the bill is trying to do, it waylays a lot of fears. Thank you.
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you. Can I? I'm not sure on the fiscal for the. Is there a fiscal for the B13 or?
Yes, this would need to be sent to Ways and Means. The original bill wasn't sent to Ways and Means because BME said that they would absorb the cost.
Okay. Thank you. And any other questions for our panel? Okay. Thank you all for your testimony. Actually, we have a legislator here for another bill, and I told them we would take it up, and I think we can dispose of it pretty quickly. So I will temporarily close the public hearing on Senate Bill 717, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 248. And Representative McPherson, would you like to come forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm State Representative Greg McPherson, House District 38, and I'm here to give you the background on Senate Bill 248 because it came through the House Judiciary Committee and was presented on the floor middle of last week, and some questions were raised on the floor, so it was referred back to this committee. It had come out of the Judiciary Committee on a unanimous vote. In the B-engrossed version of the bill. What it deals with non-competition agreements and with respect to one provision with arbitration agreements entered into between an employer and an employee. There's already an Oregon statute that requires that a non-competition agreement be entered into either at initial employment or upon a bona fide advancement in employment in order to be enforceable. And what this bill does is to apply additional restrictions on the enforceability of non-competition agreements and with respect to one element, or one requirement to add arbitration agreements to that same set of rules. In general, what it does is to limit the people the employees with whom an enforceable non-competition agreement can be entered into by fixing a pay threshold that requires a median family income or above, which is about $60,000 of income, would be a threshold level. So below that, an employee could not have an enforceable non-competition agreement. Also requires that it be an employee who is engaged in certain kinds of work that are administrative, professional, or creative in nature, so that it doesn't span to include rank-and-file employees, because our committee heard some evidence that these agreements are being presented to rank-and-file employees who don't have access to trade secrets or sensitive competitive information and really being overused in a way that prevents them from then earning a livelihood within the same locale that they've been working in the past. The bill would limit the duration of an enforceable non-competition agreement to 2 years after the employee leaves employment. So we believed in the Judiciary Committee that we had a good bill that was reported out to the floor. As I mentioned before, it was reported out on a unanimous vote. But there were some questions raised on the floor, and so we wanted an opportunity to consider whether there was any further revision in the bill that should be made in response to those. There are a couple of amendments that have been prepared and that I think you may have in front of you. The dash nines and dash tens, I believe, is the number on those. I'm not going to recommend that those be adopted. In fact, I would recommend against them, but because they are in response to points that were made in the floor debate, we wanted, in the interest of time, to have those issues in front of you. One of the concerns that was raised in the floor debate was about the timing rule. As I mentioned before, existing law requires that a non-competition agreement be entered into at the beginning of employment, And what Senate Bill 248 would do in the dash B version is to to move that back 2 weeks for a notice, a written notice to be given to the employee. Because what has been happening is the employee shows up for the first day of work and is presented with a non-competition agreement. First, the employee was alerted that this would be required. After having resigned other employment, maybe relocated from out of town to take that employment, and so having some advance notice when the employment offer is made, so that the employee can make a considered decision about whether that non-competition agreement is something that he or she wants to enter into, we think is an appropriate change in the requirements. And what the bill does in the dash B version is to require at least 2 weeks advance written notice that a non-competition agreement will be required. The amendment, the B9 amendment, takes that down to 5 business days, and if the committee felt they needed to have that change made in order to move the bill, it's there available. I would recommend against that change, because 2 weeks is the standard minimum notice time that people give when they're changing jobs. That's just the business custom. 2 weeks is sort of standard notice. And the kinds of positions that non-competition agreements are appropriate to are positions that people don't get hired to start work on that day or within 2 or 3 days. It's the kind of position, one of higher responsibility, higher expertise, higher knowledge about the industry in which the employer is working, where a longer lead time is typical. And really, it would typically be longer than 2 weeks, which is what's in the bill. So shortening it to 5 days, I would recommend against. But because it's something that was discussed, we wanted that to be available to the committee in case they felt that was an important change to make in the bill. The other amendment that was prepared are the B10s, which deal with an employer that's engaged in defense, homeland security, or emergency services under a federal contract. There was a concern expressed that having a non-competition agreement that with a 2 week advance notice period might run afoul of federal contracting rules. On reflection and after looking at a little more information about it, I'm not persuaded that that's a good change. If there is a federal statute that overrides state law, it will override. In my experience as a practicing lawyer working with non-competition agreements, and I have done quite a bit of work with them, I have never encountered a situation where there was an interplay between national defense issues and non-competition agreements. And so I don't see the importance of that provision. I don't know that it does any particular harm to put it in other than adding something to our statutes that I think is unnecessary. So I would recommend against dash B10s as well. But because we're getting to the end of the session, we wanted to have the options in front of the committee, because I think this is an important bill. We did find in our work of our Judiciary Committee that that these agreements are being overused and being applied to rank and file employees for whom they're just not suitable, and we think that the changes made by this bill are important to address that. So I'm open for any questions.
Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. You were talking about the timing rule and how it's standard to give 2 weeks' notice before switching jobs and all that, and you're assuming somebody is switching jobs. Some people are unemployed. Some people are being promoted from within. How would you handle a situation like that? This seems like it would add another bureaucratic layer that could result in unintended consequences.
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, thank you for that question. Again, I would say the kinds of positions that are appropriate to have a non-competition agreement are positions in which somebody is privy to sensitive strategic information or trade secrets. And so those are going to be higher level positions where hiring a person in to start immediately is going to be an unusual case. This bill doesn't prohibit hiring somebody sooner. It just says to the employer, if you're going to hire somebody into a position covered by a non-competition agreement, then you need to give them 2 weeks' notice that that non-competition agreement will be required. If there's some important function that needs to be performed in the meantime between when the original connection is being made with that new prospective employee, then there are other service contract arrangements that could be made to get that work done. So I think that we can reconcile those concerns by still passing this bill, and there are ways that the employer can deal with it in their business practices.
And my understanding is that the original bill did not put a time limit on it. It actually required that any time a job is offered, you have to be informed of if that's going to be a condition of accepting the offer. So the 2 weeks looks like added as an amendment.
The 2 weeks was added. The bill as it came to us from the Senate was quite different from the way it is here now, and it was substantially worked with a work group that included representatives of the trial bar and the labor commissioner and also a number of our leading industries that rely on non-competition agreements. And I might point out that I believe that non-competition agreements serve an appropriate and useful purpose. It's not that we should be getting rid of them entirely, and I think they will continue to be used for appropriate situations after this bill is passed. We just will avoid inappropriate use of these agreements.
Yes, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McPherson, the bill did pass through your committee unanimously, and I just wanted to clarify some of the discussion on the floor. The vast majority of Oregon businesses are not impacted by this in any way because they do not make use of the non-compliance rule. If someone has, for instance, a restaurant in Bend, Oregon, or they have a gas station in Medford, Oregon, and they want to hire someone, interview them on Friday, they want to hire them on Monday, this isn't going to impact them, is it?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, thank you for that question. Yes, it has no impact on any employer who does not plan to use a non-competition agreement or restriction on their employees. And in my experience, the only employees for whom these are useful and appropriate are professional employees, creative employees, employees who are at a high level of income and who are privy to trade secrets or confidential competitive information. Somebody who's working at a gas station in Bend or a restaurant in Roseburg, they are not privy to that kind of information. In my experience, they don't have non-competition agreements now. There was a concern being expressed in the floor that somehow this is going to interfere with normal employment practices, and I don't see that happening at all.
Yes, okay. Representative Berger.
Thank you.
Representative McPherson, I appreciate your coming in and explaining, because this did cause a lot of controversy. Explain to me an example of the kind of the problem that this is addressing. In other words, you've stated that too many non-competition agreements are being used inappropriately. Could you give me an example of that? In other words, where you think that they shouldn't have non-competition agreements, that this bill, the problem that this bill solves, if you will.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Berger, we heard evidence in our committee that some employers, including, for example, a chain of coffee shops, are having their store manager in each coffee shop location sign a non-competition agreement. There was other evidence that house cleaners who are employed by an agency that provides house cleaning services have their house cleaners sign a non-competition agreement. These are people who are at low levels of income and who are being handed a non-competition agreement on their first day of work without any prior notice that it would be required, and who at that point, of course, they want to start work. So they sign that up just as they do their W-4 form and, you know, enrolling in the health plan if there is one, and all those things that you do when you sign on to a new job. And there are indications that some employers are using this in order to prevent their rank-and-file workforce, the workforce is just getting the work done, from being able to go down the street to work for a competitor, and therefore not have to pay them as well in order to hold their workforce. And that, I would say, is an inappropriate use of a non-competition agreement. It should be used only for a protectable interest of the employer, which is a trade secret or some kind of sensitive kind of confidential information of the employer. So this will address that problem by requiring advance notice that the agreement would require, and by limiting the types of employees who can have such agreements.
probably a bad example, Representative. If I could pursue that, having owned a coffee shop and employed a manager, okay, who did not require a non-compete agreement, but I can tell you it is a brutally competitive business, and knowing what book of business your competitor is doing and being able to go after it is the kind of thing that would that be covered under this? If your manager is making over medium income and is aware that what your book of business is, which your manager certainly is, who your customers are and what work you're doing with them, you really don't want them to go next door and go after that business with your competitor. What's your answer to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, I'm glad you asked, because the bill, in fact, carves out protection for customer lists. So in any event, you can have an agreement that they can't go after your customer or solicit your business. That is carved out of the bill. It is purely saying they can't, that employee can't, within a certain period of time after leaving employment, and then it would be for 2 years, can't go to work for somebody else in the same business, in effect taking away their livelihood. And it still would be enforceable if they are paid more than median income and they have been provided sensitive competitive information. So if you shared with your coffee shop manager, you know, the what your business plan was for how you were going to go after certain accounts, then yes, that would make the non-competition agreement enforceable. But if it's just somebody who's there making sure people show up on time and that the work is being put out efficiently, that would probably not be confidential information that would be protected.
Thank you for that answer.
And it looks like the language you were referring to is on page 2, lines 42 and 43, that deal with customer lists. And so I think that is taken care of. Okay,
right.
Yes, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If a company was going out and put out a job description, and in the job description it stated that there will be a requirement to sign a non-compete agreement, would that be notification? I mean, say the process is going to be a month and a half long. Does it have to be an individual notice to that person, or could it be as part of the procedure for hiring?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I think that would simply notice in the advertisement of the position would not be sufficient, because what the bill says is the employer informs the employee in a written employment offer received by the employee at least 2 weeks before. So it would have to be something that would give the power of acceptance to the employee. So it wouldn't, I think it would be, might be a good idea for the employer to do that, but it wouldn't be sufficient on its own.
Thank you. Any other questions for Representative McPherson? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
My pleasure.
And we are in a work session, but I think the committee will stand at ease for just a moment. Work session members, Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 248B to the floor with due pass recommendation as is.
Representative Buckley moves Senate Bill 248B to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Other than I prefer the original bill.
Before the Senate got its hands on it, or the Judiciary Committee. Well, it's hard to unring that bell. Okay. Further discussion? Shauna, please call the roll.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye. Motion carries. And I think we will ask Representative McPherson to carry this on the floor. Thank you very much, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 248, and I'll reopen a public hearing on Senate Bill 717. And we have a lot of people signed up to testify on this bill, so I think what we will do... I think we'll call a panel of opponents of the bill, and I'll call Tracy Klein, James Ronan, and Sheldon Holmes. And we did allow a fair amount of time for the first panel, so we will not limit you in time, but we will ask you to try to keep your comments as brief as possible. And then after this panel, we will be limiting testimony to 3 minutes per witness. Otherwise, we will not be able to get through this lengthy list of witnesses. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tracy Klein. I'm a family nurse practitioner and a women's health nurse practitioner, and I'm here today as the advanced practice consultant for the Oregon State Board of Nursing. So I am representing the board as a member of board staff. The board is unable to comment on the subsequent amendments that have been introduced today. They weren't able to review them, but we did review the B9 amendments at the board meeting on Thursday. So my testimony will speak primarily to the initial bill, which is 717, as well as the B9 amendments. I will comment that I do see some similarities to some of our concerns in the B13 amendments as well, so I believe that my testimony will stand. You have copies that are being handed out of my testimony, as well as my contact information at the Board of Nursing, and some additional information on the materials that the board makes available regarding scope of practice to assist the public, as well as our licensees and the consumers, anyone who wants to access them. Senate Bill 717 is intended to provide legislators with the information that they need when facing scope of practice issues among healthcare professionals. While the Oregon State Board of Nursing recognizes that such issues are increasingly complex and emotional, we respectfully address concerns with both the original language of this bill and Senate Bill 717 B9 amendments. Nurse practitioners, as you've heard some of the history, were granted authority to practice in this state in the 1979 legislative session. At that time, prescriptive authority was under the joint jurisdiction of the Board of Medicine and the Board of Nursing through an advisory council process that included representatives from the public and professional groups, as well as board members from the Board of Medicine, Board of Pharmacy, and Board of Nursing. This was seen as a compromise measure to mitigate conflict and included all interested parties. It did not succeed or improve healthcare delivery. In fact, this process greatly delayed the ability of nurse practitioners to provide medications and care to their patients, as individual drugs and scopes of practice were repeatedly run through a committee of other professions for discussion and debate. It is our understanding that the B9 amendments were proposed to mitigate concern that a unitary regulatory board could influence the advisory process, and we do appreciate that concern. Testimony at prior hearings expressed discomfort with any one board, including the Board of Nursing, holding authority over otherwise regulated professions. Unfortunately, the B9 amendments introduce additional concerns for the Board of Nursing. We do not endorse those amendments for the following reasons. the first point, although the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute, OWHI, has been proposed as a possible venue for scope of practice discussions, the amendment language does not specifically mention OWHI and permits individual contracting with a nonprofit entity that may be public or private. And I do see that that is also the case in the B-13 amendments. A private entity, therefore, making recommendations to the legislature has no requirements in place to meet public access, disclosure, or public meetings laws. The review committee, as proposed, allows for review of any scope of practice issue at any time upon written request, and this was of great concern. While intended to refer to changes in scope, that terminology is subjective. As written, the B-9 amendments permit review of currently legislated scope of practice, and that was a very important point, that there are things that people are already doing in practice that could be challenged by this process if another profession or organization perceives it as a change. This review could be as detailed as challenging the ability to run a pregnancy test or the ability to take a throat culture or dress a wound if one profession objected to it. Committee appointment also is based upon stated point of view rather than qualifications, expertise, professional licensure, or experience. It is unclear if the affected parties will receive representation through this process. And I do see that that is somewhat mitigated in B-13, but it's still of concern. Finally, scope of practice changes and evolves with each individual's health professional experience, training, expertise, and credentialing. Scope also varies based upon geographic and need considerations. Oregonians are already unable to access health care according to a recent Commonwealth Fund study in which we rank 45 out of the 50 states in access to health care when needed. And I've included a copy of that in your folder. Adding additional processes for non-legislative discussion and input regarding scope of practice will significantly slow the process already in place by regulatory boards to address these questions from their licensees and from the public. The Board of Nursing currently provides individual consultation as well as publicly accessible documents such as a scope of practice decision-making guide for RN and LPN practice tree and a framework on scope of practice for nurse practitioners, which I wrote, and I've provided the references for that. I've included copies for your review and information, and you may access additional copies through our website, and I've given the website address as well as my phone number, email, and contact information. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum and distinguished members of the House Rules Committee. I wish to thank you for conducting this important hearing on Senate Bill 717. For the record, I am Dr. James Ronan, a health policy researcher as well as a practicing nurse practitioner in Portland, Oregon. Additionally, I am one of the founding members of the Oregon Coalition of Nurse Practitioners, whose primary mission is to advocate for access to affordable, high-quality health care for all Oregonians. We rise in opposition to Senate Bill 717 for the following reasons. While acknowledging that the appropriate intent of 717 was focused on streamlining the scope of practice debate of healthcare professionals, the process is highly flawed, we feel. The creation of another layer of bureaucracy between the public and legislators limits the debate of scope of practice issues so crucial to public safety and quality to affordable healthcare. The divisiveness that's been focused to all other disciplines from organized medicine is overwhelming, and I've attached a plethora of documentation to my testimony that I'd like to enter into record. I won't go over it all, but quite frankly, nurse practitioners and all healthcare professions are under attack from organized medicine, and we are highly concerned with the original intent to house this in the Board of Medical Examiners. Likewise, we're still highly suspect of housing it in any organized academic medical venue, which still has some impetus with respect to the agendas of organized medicine. Let me speak, please, to our amendment B-12. B-11. Getting my numbers wrong here. B-11. We would like to see a workforce for the following reasons. There was a national document promulgated by six national organizations of
regulatory agencies, and I have attached that to my testimony. A major portion of what their recommendation is to look at scopes of practice with respect to safety, competence, and to avoid turf battles. The key point to their focus was to look at regulatory boards of all states to have them work across their particular responsibilities instead of in silos like they currently do. That is the key point of what the problem is today, is that they are not working together about scopes of practice issues. So we would like to recommend our amendment as a substitution for the current B13, because I think it gives us an opportunity to pause and look at what some possibilities are that may have better resolutions than houses that invest in a particular institute. I remain available to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak before you. For the record, my name is Shelda Holmes. I'm a family nurse practitioner, the clinician owner of a family practice in North Northeast Portland. I am a doctoral student at OHSU School of Nursing. I am a member of the Nurse Practitioners of Oregon and the Oregon Coalition of Nurse Practitioners. I am testifying before you today to express my concerns about Senate Bill 717. I oppose Senate Bill 717 because it is a threat to advanced practice nurses. The problem, as it has been identified to me, is that legislators struggle with healthcare scopes of practice. Scopes of practice issues impact safety and the allocation of healthcare services for Oregonians. Existing scopes of practice and proposed changes are often difficult to evaluate in the midst of emotionally laden turf battles. Getting accurate information is further complicated by the logistics of the legislative process, too few staff, for example. Not all stakeholders are present in the Capitol, and special interests can dominate the discussion. Additionally, one cannot underestimate the impact of the historical context. This is especially true with respect to nurse practitioners, as you have heard. There is a wide spectrum of state board and professional association involvement in this process, and in all honesty, a paucity of cooperation among us. And it is therefore difficult to find opinions that level an honest assessment of the impact of scope changes on public health and safety. But regardless of all of these barriers, at the end of the day, legislation must take place to change scopes of practice. I appreciate legislators cannot be experts in all things and therefore desire a structured, unbiased process that considers all the stakeholders. But Senate Bill 717 is not the solution. I find 717 be problematic for the following five reasons. Senate Bill 717 and Amendment B13 establish a process outside of the legislature for addressing soap practice. This is a legally contentious delegation of legislative authority, which you may hear about in testimony. Two, Senate Bill 717 originally set up the Board of Medical Examiners to oversee and house this process. It is extraordinarily problematic to place any one state board or organization or institute at the helm of this process. Specifically, this is a threat to advanced practice nurse scope practice. This hearing room is full of advanced practice nurses who are passionate about this issue and will probably further testify to this point. Three, there are uncertain fiscal considerations for B13 amendment. Any pre-vetting scopes of practice process that is created outside of the existing infrastructure will require considerable resources, and I'm not certain we know how much it will cost to do this well. Four, a process outside the legislature creates an additional level of bureaucracy between citizens and their political representation. I do believe that this disproportionately affects some Oregonians, in particular rural Oregonians. Five, lastly, for an issue of such importance, I urge the legislature to take a far more substantive approach today. One solution would be to designate an interim healthcare committee or a legislative task force to explore the question, how can the existing state-funded infrastructure collaborate, better advise, and educate legislators, moving away from turf battles and toward health and safety for all Oregonians? While I very much appreciate the numerous iterations this bill has taken in the past couple of weeks, I believe this is far too important an issue to handle in this manner at the end of session. We need to slow down and take advantage of this interim so that at the end of the interim, the public knows that the legislature came up with the very best solution possible. I do have a proposal, and that's Amendment B-11. Amendment B-11 establishes an interim legislative task force to exclusively address the process of scopes of practice changes. It is a reasonable alternative that and allows for a thoughtful discourse over the interim session. It calls for input from every one of the state healthcare regulatory boards. It is a process open to the public, and it is in the control of the legislature. Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, if Senate Bill 717 is to pass out of this committee, I urge you to adopt Amendment B-11. Thank you for your time, and I'm available for questions.
Yes, Vice Chair Berger.
Yeah, questions. I think for Ms. Klein probably would be the best to field this. Surely other states are struggling with this same issue. What are they doing?
Excuse me. Representative Berger, thank you. It does vary from state to state. That's one of the side effects of the federalist system. Our state has chosen to create my position. My position was created at the request of the board in 1997 because they felt that the issues related to nurse practitioners practicing as autonomously as they do in this state, as well as nurse anesthetists and then now clinical nurse specialists, were complicated, and the board was having difficulty with those discussions. So they made the decision to come and approach the legislature to fund a position on the board designated to advanced practice, and that's James McDonald, who's a family nurse practitioner, as well as my position as a board staff, and make it a consultant role rather than an investigatory role. So it's a consultant policy role. That's how our board has done that. Arizona has a similar process that they use, and they also have an additional advisory committee within the board for scope of practice issues that advises the legislature. Texas, I am aware, has an advanced practice consultant. There are other states that do these sorts of things by ad hoc committees that are called. I'm not aware of standing committees or a committee of this type, but I didn't truly research the other states as in depth.
I represent the budget.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm much more inclined towards the B-11, if that's even necessary. I'm wondering if you had conversations with Representative Greenlick, who chairs the House Healthcare Committee, to see if this might be something he'd be interested in taking on during the interim.
While not speaking for Representative Greenlick, I can tell you that in conversations with him, he has mentioned that he would be interested in taking a more substantive approach and taking advantage of the interim to do that.
Thank you. I guess what I wanted to ask you is, I think what's driving this bill at its heart is that the legislature gets these disputes on a regular basis every time we meet, and there's a feeling that we don't have the expertise to sort out the merits of changes that are proposed usually by one profession and opposed often by many others. And so I guess my question to you would be, obviously the Dash 11s simply convene another committee of the legislature to take a look at this and then try to recommend some better way of doing it than what we do now. Do you have an idea of what that would look like?
I think we're on the right track in the most recent iteration of the amendment, B-13. That's my personal opinion. However, it lacks some pretty basic public input. It's not clear as to whether or not this goes out to a bidding process, especially given that it's going to be shunted over to Ways and Means. We've got major fiscals to consider. So then it could possibly be open to public or private institute. I also have the concern that in the last few weeks, there's been some institute shopping. Who will take on this? And at this point, the Oregon Workforce, the Healthcare Workforce Institute, do really important work that they are mandated to do, and that is to address health care workforce issues. And their advisory board reflects this expertise. So to add a completely different mandate or mission would require some some very thoughtful consideration of those persons that they will rely on.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I just want to point out that the state currently has the expertise in regulatory boards, but they aren't communicating in a way that's collaborative in order to work out solutions. So what we're asking is that you look at the resources that are currently available and ask that they do business in a different way. That's the nature of what we want to see happen in this task force.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Can I make a comment before you leave? Because I, having been through this, and if adding a position at the Board of Nursing would have solved the problem would have been solved.
We didn't have any bills that I'm aware of.
Okay. We have an issue where scope of practice is brought to us, and we do not have, frankly, the expertise or the sort of... So I think what the dash 11s and 13, or not 11s, but 9s and 13s speak to, get an outside person, because clearly BME has a vested interest. I think that's where we're going with this. So another legislative task force, to me, is like doing the same thing all over again and expecting a different result. So convince me that the dash 11s would get something other than coming back and arguing this all over again in the next session.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chair Rosenbaum and committee members, Representative Berger makes a very valid point. My argument to convince you would be that we're not certain what the best process is. If any process that takes on scope of practice any process that takes up scope of practice needs to be well thought out. And while certainly a great many people have been working on this recently, an institute may not be the best place to house this process. But we don't know. We're creating legislation. We're going to create a law. It's going to take place immediately because it establishes an emergency, which would potentially short circuit a process that might have taken place that would be much better through the interim. But we won't know that because there'll be a law in place. So, yes, legislative task force are often not taken advantage of like they should be. The work may not always be done like it should be. But I really feel that this House and the Senate are very motivated to address this issue in the interim. Very motivated.
Can I hear if I can comment?
Yes, okay. Representative Buckley.
Thank you. In exchange, response to Representative Berger, we do have some different entities. MLAC is a good example that have credibility because they've established a process that all sides buy into. When I look at the Dash 13 and I look at the proposal that we have two members who are proponents of a change, two members who are opponents of a change, and two members who are neutral, we're saying of a process where the decision on scope of practice is going to come down to two people, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And which two people? It's not defined how these people are qualified to make that decision. There's no credibility in this type of decision making process. It takes it down from a public process to a very small private process, again with two people who are undefined, basically are going to make the decision. And I'm not sure what happens if those two people disagree.
Mm-hmm.
And then we end up with three opponents and three proponents. So.
Representative Berger.
Okay, so let's go to the Dash 11s. And what exactly is this task force going to do?
As I mentioned before, I'd be happy to see the House committee take this on with a goal of proposing a process similar to an MLAC process or another process that we could have buy-in from all sides.
So what you're suggesting, Representative, is instead of having a task force, have the Interim Healthcare Committee take this on?
I think that would be a good use of state resources.
I think you better discuss it with the Senate President and Lori Moto-Sanderson, but it's an interesting thought. I like it as well as another task force, to tell you the truth, because I'm tired of just sending task force out there because I'm not sure what this task force's charge is.
Representative Roslin.
And I guess it's a kind of follow-up to Representative Berger's questions, and that is, this is a process, the 13s, does set up a process that says, here's how it's going to be done. It still comes as a recommendation to the legislature. I disagree with Representative White, I go blank. Peters. Thanks, Peter. On Representative Buckley's comment, in that it, I think it clearly says if they can't come to an agreement, then they'll give out the report as to what it is that happens. And so what I guess I'm saying is, it is in itself, what we're doing now doesn't work, because what we get is everybody coming with their different ideas when you have whatever scope of practice is, and one group fighting another group, and the legislature listening to it, and then finally kind of flipping a coin and deciding who they think they're going to go with, because we don't have those expertise. At least this puts expertise on both sides talking about it, and a report that comes out that says, here's all the things we thought of. If they come to consensus, it comes out as a recommendation. If it doesn't come out as consensus, it comes out as a, here's all the information that we went through. So at least we have all of that stuff vetted at least one place before it comes to us. And at the end of the day, when the legislature comes back the next time, we could change it. I mean, I think that it starts out saying, here's one way you can do it, and for this next 2 years, if we pass the 13s, we'll see how it works. It's still going to end up back to the legislature making the decision, and if it isn't working well, there'll be a lot of people here trying to explain to us why it isn't working well. If it works well, we have something in place that we can say, let's keep it going. I guess from my perspective, I have watched task force after task force, year after year, for some things, just keep going on, perpetually coming up with another task force, and the same groups that didn't want to come to agreement in the first place continue to make sure that it doesn't come to agreement in those task forces. And so not doing something really frustrates me, because I think with another task force, my own personal opinion, we'll end up at the same place next time asking for another task force. Even if we put it in our committee, we're going to have the same kind of problem, because there are different groups, depending on what the issue is, who want to have their day in court. Now, and that's the legislature, basically. So why would it be bad, I guess what I'm asking you, to put in place the 13s, mm-hmm. and let that go forward for a couple of years with recommendations coming back so that we can at least see if this is the way we should be going? I mean, in the final analysis, the legislature still has to make the final decision, even with that program, as I read it. So,
and
to anybody.
Before you answer that, I think I was having the same conversation with the committee administrator. It appears in the Dash 13s, nothing changes in terms of the current requirement that the legislature would have to vote on changes in scope of practice, because they're spelled out in statute right now. It looks like this just provides for a recommendation process that goes through the Department of Human Services. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to respond to Representative Roblin's question, please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I suppose I do think that more thoughtful consideration is better than a poor solution. And I also would like to reiterate that a structure that is proposed in B13 with two members opposed and two members in favor and then two neutral parties, which I'm sure will be hard pressed to find, actually reinforces our silo system. So you end up having chiropractors on one side and physical therapists on the other side. And basically you just end up having this argument somewhere that doesn't bother your, you know, doesn't create a headache for you immediately, which I can imagine. It may not be the best solution. I would also like to mention that when this was before, we can be honest.
Yes. Absolutely.
When this was before Chair Greenlich's committee, I heard from a representative that literally spoke down to me and said, "This is an experiment. Give it a couple years." I am a non-consenting participant in such an experiment. This is far too important an issue to not take very seriously, and to allow the interim the time to come up with a very thoughtful process is what I urge you to do.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. And we are going to keep going, try to hear it from as many people as possible. Next, I'll call Susan King. and David Goldberg and Carol Howe, it looks like. We are going to ask you to limit your testimony to 3 minutes, and we'll let you know when we're at that point so you can wrap up.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Susan King. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Nurses Association. We represent 11,000 nurses statewide, which include staff nurses, nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, and all of other categories of nurses. As I think you've already heard from Tracy Klein, Oregon enjoys the most progressive environment for advanced practice nurses in the nation. And that really is because since the mid-1970s, the Oregon legislature, both your predecessors and some of you who are here now, have worked very closely with ONA and the regulatory boards to create a healthcare workforce that meets the needs of our population. I am going to correct Tracy in that, only because I'm older than she is, in that the legislature first established the laws related to nurse practitioners in the mid-70s, before 1979. It is because of our stature in the country that ONA has opposed the original language of the bill, which appeared to give one profession purview over the scope of practice of another. I did serve on the joint committee under the BME shortly after nurse practitioners achieved independent prescriptive authority, and I can tell you that process was not smooth, nor was it particularly effective. The concern over this bill is related, as you've heard, to the existence of the AMA Scope of Practice Partnership, which was brought to them by a group of their members from states with assistance from six medical specialty organizations. The American Nurses Association at the national level has convened a group of other healthcare provider organizations to work against any attempt by organized medicine to subsume our scope of practice under their work. The partnership stated objective is to become the authority on all healthcare providers' scope of practice, and I'm not going to go into that. I'll be happy to answer questions. As you've heard, Senator Mona Sanderson is attempting to provide a process whereby a scope of practice proposal can be examined and evaluated. While past scopes have perhaps been more clear, as in the case between nurse practitioners and physicians, more recent discussions have focused on professions which are less well known or understood. The Dash 13 amendments have taken care of the most significant concerns of the Oregon Nurses Association and our advanced practice membership leaders within Nurse Practitioners of Oregon and Oregon Council of Clinical Nurse Specialists. We've given our word that the removal of the Board of Medicine and any apparent desire to dominate other professions and the establishment of what might be an objective third-party process would allay the majority of our concerns. Senator Mona Sanderson has made a number of changes that were needed to address the most conspicuous and controversial language in the bill, which you've already heard about, including her comment today that she will consider moving the sunset date, which is something we requested that she do, thus essentially giving us an interim to try this experiment. Questions about the implementation, which you've already heard, are significant. My organization shares those. What about the public process? How will the representatives be chosen? And how will fairness and equity be assured? These will certainly be critical issues that will have to be clarified if this policy is actually implemented. We can live with the amendments contained in Dash 13 because the legislature's authority is preserved, and I think that's the most important part of the Dash 13 amendments. While we are unsure whether the entity named in the bill will have the expertise or be able to affect the procedures that are contained in the bill, ultimately the legislature will have the final authority, and secondarily it is important to note that in the Dash 13 amendments this process is voluntary, so any group or groups wishing to discuss scope of practice continue to have their democratic rights preserved in that they may come directly to their elected representatives as they do now.
Your time is up if you could try to wrap up.
Sure. The only thing I would say is the public in Oregon and elsewhere has benefited from a healthcare workforce that includes broad scopes of practice for all, and particularly in my case I'm speaking for nurses and nurse practitioners. And our goal is to preserve that healthcare workforce so that we have the providers we need now and in the future, should we ever be brave enough to reform our healthcare system. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Chairwoman Rosenbaum and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm Dr. Carol Howe. I'm a certified nurse midwife, and I'm the director of the midwifery program at OHSU and also of all of the advanced practice nursing programs at OHSU. I'm speaking to you today as a private citizen, not on behalf of OHSU, and I have grave concerns about Senate Bill 17 and the Dash 13 amendments. It is easy to understand the frustration of the legislature faced with trying to sort through all of the interprofessional tensions that go around scope of practice issues and to tease out those that are critical to the public safety as opposed to just in the economic or professional interest of the various professions. Nevertheless, I think that the proposed solution to create this committee of two proponents, two opponents, two neutrals serves only to shift the legislature's responsibility to a format that would be less transparent, more closed, and potentially biased. It was frightening to me that the original bill passed with the Board of Medical Examiners language in it. And that has created an entire suspicion around this entire process, I have to say. And my concerns with regard to the process, even if administered by an institute which, as people have pointed out, has yet to be totally defined. It could be private, not open to the public in terms of their debate. I think Representative Buckley said it very nicely with regard to how can you possibly make a reasoned recommendation of a committee of two proponents, two opponents, and two poor, supposedly neutral people in the middle of those two groups. And how would one define someone who is neutral? That person is probably non-existent. Everybody has had experience with a healthcare system in some way, positive or negative, that is likely to make them lean more toward more traditional or more toward alternative practitioners. So to me, the whole committee structure or review committee structure is a flawed concept and really requires some review. I am particularly concerned about the language that would seem to allow the process to call into question retroactively current scopes of practice after 30 years of trying to make our practice work well, and the fact that nurse practitioners and nurse midwives tend to serve the poor and disenfranchised of this state, to set up a system that could, in one legislative session, turn back 30 years of practice would be extraordinarily frightening to me. The current system, while it's not perfect and is, in fact, I understand totally that it's a very onerous process for you, has served Oregonians well. In essence, I think you guys have done a good job over the years, and as painful as it may have been for you to make those scope of practice decisions. So I don't think it's totally broken. I would like to see a process. I could support Dash 11, which would allow us to sit and thoughtfully take some time to work with you to figure out a way to make it a better, more efficient, and easier process. And I'm particularly concerned about why this is an emergency bill. I have little understanding why a process that has worked so well for all of these years all of a sudden is an emergency and must be changed immediately. I thank you very much for your consideration of these thoughts, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm David Goldberg. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Healthcare Workforce Institute, the body that is intended to take on this onerous task. We did not ask for this, I will tell you that. Senator Mona Sanderson and Dr. Bruce Goldberg, the head of DHS, approached me and I, our board, to see if this was something that, with our responsibilities for healthcare workforce, would be interested in taking on and being a facilitator, an arbiter, an independent researcher to do. I think we can do that. I don't think any system, frankly, for dealing with scopes of practice change is going to be easy. These are contentious issues. These are, they have financial impacts. They have impacts in terms of access to care, particularly in some, with some of our most vulnerable populations. I'm very concerned about rural areas. I was director of rural health for the state of New Mexico and know a fair amount about how important it is to have people, able to practice in smaller communities, with at times limited licenses, at times exceptions to licenses because of access issues. So I'm very sensitive to that. I think the important piece here is that the process right now is onerous for the legislature. I mean, we're asking citizen legislators to deal with very complicated issues and to do it quickly and to do it with enormous pressure on them. This session, there were at least 15 bills that we could identify that address scopes of practice. And I've spoken to the chairs on the House and the Senate side, and while there's different opinions as to where there needs to be some independence here, Mitch would like an institute within the legislative body, for example, to do independent work to be able to provide some sense of what the state of the literature is, what's happening in other states, how are these being approached, to be able to present consensus, develop consensus, and if not, to present the issues fairly, again, without taking any control, any power, anything away from the public process. Ultimately, it's your decision. I see this as an experiment. I mean, I think that this would be an interesting iterative process that ought to sunset so that we can examine it, we can get the feedback from the parties that have participated. This is not going away. There are a number of controversies I see coming. There's an interesting one with physical therapists and chiropractors. There's some ones with podiatrists and orthopedic surgeons. There's some prescriptive issues with psychologists and psychiatrists. There's a whole variety of issues that you've heard before. You're going to hear again, and we're also seeing some interesting pressure on the professions to move their professional credentials up. Pharmacists will be doctors completely in 10 years, and the big pharmacy program now, the new one at Pacific University, is a doctoral program. Nurse practitioners, in fact, will have to have doctoral degrees in order to qualify as nurse practitioners over time. That will be phased in, and so as this increased training and more experience and more demands are put on folks, there's going to be pressure at the borders. And the intent here is to have some neutral as that can be. And believe me, if we're responsible for finding neutrals, I understand how difficult that will be. But nonetheless, this is our best approach to trying to provide you with independent work that says, this is the state of practice right now. These are the issues. Good luck in making those decisions. And that's the intent. So I'm happy to provided you with that report that was referred to, where the changes in healthcare professional scope of practice legislative considerations, which I found very, very helpful, yes, and also with the list of our board of directors to show you that this is not an institute that's dominated by any one profession. And in fact, there are three nurses, one of whom is the director of the Oregon Center of Nursing on our board, so there's no other agenda here. I can understand how scary this bill was with the Board of Medical Examiners being this independent, supposed independent party. And I think that's what stirred up a lot of the concern, understandably. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, are you a relation to Bruce Goldberg?
No, I'm not.
We needed to get that on the
yes,
record.
Yes, right. Although we're both bald New Yorkers that drove taxicabs in Manhattan, we discovered.
Okay, so no relation.
We're no relation.
Absolutely qualified to work in our state, then.
Indeed.
And could I have one follow-up? Dr. Howe.
Yes.
Basically, the substance of your testimony is that you don't think it's broke. You think that the current system is workable and working in terms of the legislature coming up with these scope of practice sort of solutions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Berger. I believe that it works. I am aware that it is painful. I am aware that it could be more efficient. I believe that the process might be able to be improved. I'm certain that this is not the best way to improve it. And frankly, it's my sense is that there has not been a great deal of input or thought with regard to the development of this process. It was just simply, let's do something, and this looks simple, and it looks fair. But I don't think that this is the answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Roebling.
A couple of questions, and thank you, Chair. Dr. Howe, you had mentioned that one of the things that made you the most uptight about the bill was the fact that retroactivity, looking back at some of those, and yet, don't you, I mean, it is clear, in my opinion, that that's always available. I mean, if another group came and said, here's what you did last session with respect to giving XYZ, and look at the results, there are these problems that have been generated, and we found these problems, the legislature would look at taking those back. So, I mean, I think that's always out there. I think that it's been a progressive deal with respect to nurse practitioners, and I'm appreciative of that. I mean, in my local area, nurse practitioners are a major part of the healthcare providers in the Southern Oregon region. So, I mean, I think it has been a great move. But I'm certain that people will continue to look, and don't you acknowledge that that's probably what we have now?
Representative Roebling, thank you. I do agree that it is possible. I think that under our current system, it would be somewhat less likely. What concerns me about this new system is that the issue was taken off to a small room with six people in it, whereas now if somebody introduced something like that, I think it would be a much more open process. The debate would be more open, less truncated.
Susan King, a couple questions. The first, I guess, is to just acknowledgement. I appreciate in your testimony that you acknowledge that you like keeping the word as a group. I think that I managed exactly the words of that. But I will say that in this organization, having relationships with the people and staying there is really important. So I appreciated that comment. But I also want to ask, as you look at this, the 13s, you know, what do you see as the practical effect of that, especially if it has the sunset?
Thank you, Representative Roebling and members of the committee. I would just restate in answer to your question that I think it allows the process that we currently have in place to remain in place. And I have to say, we've done very well representing nurse practitioners and clinical nurse specialists, so it shouldn't surprise you that I would say that. However, I would say that I believe the reason for our success is not only that we represent so many nurses and nurse practitioners across the state, but that the factors on which this entity will evaluate scope proposals that actually came out of the Pew Commission, it's actually work of the Pew Commission that I support because there is much of it that I don't. But the Pew Commission factors, which are looking at public safety, which are looking at training, education, and looking at practice, are really the factors that have underscored our legislative proposals over the years, and hence our legislative success with you beginning in 1975. So I think the practical effect, even though I still have many concerns and wish that we had not had to have this discussion in the heat of the legislature, I wish we had had this discussion prior to introduction of any bill. The practical effect, I think, will be that we can test this out, that we have factors that an entity will use. There are serious concerns we're going to have to work out. And based on what Senator Mona Sanderson said today, if the sunset is moved up to 2010, we'll have a very short period to figure it out. And then I'm sure many of us in the room will be back before you next year, either in 2 years, either to propose something better, to ask you to eliminate it completely, or have some other discussion.
My final one, but thank you, Madam Chair. And this one would be for David Goldberg. And it has to do with, you know, I've heard this concern about this closed session behind doors, whatever, and I haven't seen a whole lot of these kinds of things, and I guess what I'd ask you, if you are in fact involved in this, is this going to be something that is not open to the public behind closed doors? Or
Madam Chair and Representative Roland, I think this should be open to the public. I mean, I have no difficulty with this being an open process. Again, this is meant to be have the ability to spend some time on these issues and not to do it in this kind of setting with 2-minute time frames and great difficulty getting all your questions answered. So it's meant to be open. It's meant to be iterative. The wording that's in there, this actually will be vetted out through a contract through DHS, and so there's chances for making it more open, because I share that concern.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Goldberg, just as the amendment is written, it's, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, your institute would have no choice. If there is a written request to change scope of practice, you will have to accept that written request. You will have to impanel 6 people to, no matter who makes the request, no matter what the request is, you will have to have a panel to focus on that request. Is that correct?
Chair Rosenbaum and Representative Buckley, that's unclear to me, frankly. It looks that way. There, I believe there should be, frankly, a vetting process at DHS, because that's where it comes to get nuisance requests, if you will, out of that system. As I said, there were 15 bills that are very clearly focused in this session on scope of practice that we believe would have been suggested to go through this process. And it's on that basis that we've entertained this role, frankly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Groveland. Well,
because of that question, I'll ask one more. And that is that the way this is written, it does give DHS, I mean, the authority to do rules and to make a rule-setting issue. And in those rules, it could easily be that they have that vetting process and they send what they send to you as a contractor. And secondly, it could happen, is what I'm saying. And then third, is it also not true that assigning those people, which I agree is going to be a difficult task finding them, doesn't mean that they will sit in a room. It means that those 6 people will take in testimony from lots of people, including the public, to then come up with a recommendation. And so I think that can be a very public process. It's just that they're a decision-making group, a smaller one, just like there is here, where there's a decision-making group of a committee before it gets out to be voted. So, I mean, in ours, we have to eventually take a decision. In this one, it can say the decision is that we have no decision, and here's all the information we got. Is that not?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, in my mind's eye, this process does the following. It gives the legislative committees, and it gives a process, and a more time-consuming process, to have people present the points of view, to attempt to generate consensus. If consensus is reached, great. We then come forward with a report that says consensus has been reached. These are the issues of consensus. This is what we find happening in other states, and we're a resource to the committees. If consensus is not reached, then there is a process by which we fairly identify the issues that are not in consensus. And we can then bring to that argument, this is what's happening in other states, and this is the literature, and this is the issue, for the committees then to ponder and to make the appropriate decision for Oregon. That's how I see this process.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Goldberg, I had a question for you. It seems like most of these disputes really reflect a tension between the fact that obviously, certain professions have the ability to do certain functions and are pretty protectionist about giving up or allowing anybody else to then also be able to perform those responsibilities. And on the other hand, we've got this huge shortage of people in the healthcare professions almost universally. And from the name of your institute, it sounds like that shortage may be your main mission. So I guess my question to you would be, do you currently look at scope of practice issues as one of the ways of addressing availability and dealing with these shortages?
Madam Chair, that's a fabulous question. The answer is yes, we do. We don't have a role in that per se. And from my background, I mean, I've done a fair amount of work in this area, having
been responsible for rural health in a very rural state of New Mexico, and in fact got the nurse practitioner prescription privileges into law when I was in New Mexico because of the public safety. And then because of access, there was no way to be able to deliver services to small rural communities where we could not recruit physicians and we could not recruit other health care professionals without changing scope of practice to enable qualified people to have more privileges to be able to take care of the population. This is going to get worse. We're going to have a dramatic physician shortage that's going to get worse and worse and worse over the next 10 years. So there's going to be tension, and that tension is going to be between public safety and access. And that's where you folks are going to be arbitrating and dealing with how do we lean on these particular issues. And in, there are states that now say if you're in these kinds of settings, you have these rights. And it requires perhaps more training in order to do that, and they're being watched very carefully. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of that kind of approach and proposal because the shortages are going to get more extreme.
Okay, thank you all for your testimony. We are now a subcommittee because we've lost our quorum of committee members, but since we are in a public hearing, we can continue to take testimony. So I will call Patty Hansen, Pam Hellings, and Kate Pelosi.
This goes to the you're one of the neutral people.
I am. I'd be glad to be there.
Please be seated, and I think we probably heard that we are limiting your comments to 3 minutes each, so please try to respect that time limit, and we'll let you know.
Keep me informed, huh?
Please go ahead.
Chairwoman Rosenbaum and committee members that are remaining. Actually, I think some of our previous testimony has hit a lot of the issues that I wanted to focus on, so I think I won't use my 3 minutes.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Pam Hellings. I am a retired pediatric nurse practitioner, and I was a part of the committee that developed the legislature-mandated initial rules of practice for nurse practitioners and nurse midwives in the state of Oregon in 1975. Despite my retirement, I remain interested in health care and regulatory issues. I think I'll, because as I say, so much has already been said, I would just like to say that I only became aware of this bill last Thursday. Somehow it was very quiet in the process, and the ways that I usually hear about things just weren't happening. And for me, despite the numerous amendments, I think we're still left with a flawed bill that we need more time, and I hate to see enactment as the legislature is preparing to adjourn. I completely understand the challenges of trying to make decisions about scope of practice and how difficult that can be, but I don't think a process, I keep thinking, you know, it's like you go into a civil case in law and you set up a jury and you say, we're going to have 12 members and four of them, we know you how you already feel about asbestos and four of that you really don't think it's a problem and four of you think it's a huge problem. Now we're going to get four of you on the jury that are neutral on this issue. Well, who's going to make the decision? You already know how eight of the people, or in the case of this particular committee, you already know how four of them stand on the issue. So you're leaving to two people to try to sort through all this information, to try to bring consensus. I think it's a flawed process. And I would just urge that I think there probably are some things that need to be done, but that we slow down and that we really go forward with a bill that makes sense to all of us. Thank you.
Great. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I'm Kate Pelosi, and I'm a nurse midwife, also in Portland, Oregon. I've been in practice in Oregon. Thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, for allowing us to speak this morning. And no, I am no relation to Pelosi, although there's a good chance our husbands are related. The name is not even that common in Italy. So, you have my written testimony, and it really has addressed many of the things that have been discussed in the hearing this morning. What I still remain concerned about is that even the B-13 amendments, although I've not had an opportunity to study them carefully, I believe, allow the legislative process to be hijacked. And my concern is not the fact that you don't need help. I completely understand that, and this is complex. As many of my colleagues have stated this morning, we are deeply empathetic to how difficult this is, and it's only, as has been stated by Dr. Goldberg, going to continue to get worse, which is sad. I wish that we were at a truly historic time when we knew how to work together to solve the problem rather than create more divisiveness. My concern is in the way the bill is written, I understand it to say that it does not require the legislature to request that a review process be convened. So there could be a proposed scope change that never reaches the legislature, because any person, any professional of any profession or professional organization or board representing a professional organization can request that this committee be convened. And so you may never have an opportunity to hear the merits other than once after it has gone through this review process. I would like to believe, I would like to trust in the review process. I agree with the description, sadly, that we do still function as silos, and I would much rather find a way to have a process that would truly bring us together talking about providing health care to Oregonians and to citizens of the U.S. in general. So I speak in opposition to, sadly, the amendments as well. I really appreciate Senator Manas Anderson's attempts to really address the very genuine concerns that we have, and she's done that brilliantly. I believe that there remain major flaws to the amendments that could, as I said, pull this out of the legislative process. Challenging as it is, you are our elected officials. We do rely on you. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to just go ahead and read mine outright. It still remains my feeling. Dear committee members, I am writing and speaking today in response to Senate Bill 717 and the proposed amendments. My name is Patty Hansen, and I'm a certified nurse midwife in the state of Oregon. I currently hold the position of chapter chair for the Oregon chapter of the American College of Nurse Midwives. I'm employed at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Oregon, as the midwifery practice manager. I'm a former National Health Service scholarship recipient and served in a health professional shortage area in Oregon State. Most importantly, I've been providing excellent, safe, and cost-effective maternity and gynecologic care for women and babies in Oregon State for over 8 years. Today, I'm speaking to you as a private citizen and as a midwife. My purpose today is to shed light on my personal interpretation of Senate Bill 717. While I understand the rationale for passage of this bill in order to assist our legislators with difficult healthcare decisions, I must object to the concept of a scope of practice review committee. My concern is that this bill and the proposed amendments set up a system in which either the Board of Medical Examiners or some other as yet unnamed institute would appoint a committee to review the scope of practice of health professionals in Oregon State whenever a change is proposed. The bill does not preclude one health professional regulatory board from proposing a change to the scope of practice of another healthcare profession. What rules are in place to stop one profession from limiting expansion of the scope of practice of another profession that may be seen as financial competition? I see the potential for mid-level providers to lose their independent scope of practice. This will not help Oregonians in a time where access to care in this state is abysmal. There is evidence-based research demonstrating the safety and efficacy of certified nurse midwives and nurse practitioners. Mid-level providers often choose to work in underserved areas and with clients who lack insurance. How are we helping these women and children if we limit the scope of practice of nurse midwives in this state? This bill has the potential to do just that, limit the scope of practice of advanced practice nurses throughout the state, and thereby limit access to care for all our vulnerable, underserved Oregonians. Please help us to help this population and withdraw Senate Bill 717. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Roblin.
I guess I wanted to do two things there. Mm-hmm. How would this do limit the scope any more than a group bringing that forward to the legislature to limit your scope with a regular bill like we do now? I mean, they could do that right now. Why would this board have any more authority to do that, that you think, than what we're currently doing?
The way I interpret this committee is that it would be truncated into a small group where big decisions would be made by just a few folks. And it just seems that it would have the potential to be a more biased committee.
Hello? But the final decision, that they don't make decisions. They send that to us. The legislature makes decision. And I guess my other question along that same line is, I agree with a lot of people. We need to start not looking at as many silos. And as long as we have organizations that each one has to do their own thing, and not some place where it all comes down for where they all have to get together and talk, I don't think we're going to get there. And so I look at this as the first attempt to try to get everybody recognizing that we all have to work together to get to this smaller group. And then I guess the other question I would have is that we have a room full of people right now. It's almost all nurse practitioners who I think are some of the best people out there. So I really like nurse practitioners. The group in my community, it our health clinic at the high school that I was involved with, that's the only way it's going to exist. So from my perspective, it's a really great group. But I don't see the psychologists. I mean, you guys didn't even have any bills here this session, and you're uptight with this one, and yet all these others who have scope of practice bills, I don't see them in the audience. So I don't understand. I guess I'm not quite grasping why.
I guess my comment would be, I just think we can do better than this. I don't quite know what the answer is, but I think we can do better.
Okay. Anybody else?
I was just going to comment that. Thank you very much for your question, Representative Roblin. I think that the reason you see so many nurse practitioners here really is because of the way the original bill was written. Okay. And because, as I submitted to you in my written testimony, the sad fact that there is a very concerted national initiative within the AMA to control our practice and to bring it back into that practice. And you're right that this committee would hopefully not do that. You know, I want to believe that this committee, Scope of Practice Review Committee, is exactly what on the face value it is intended to be, to help you with complex decision making. And I am saddened that I have been forced into this feeling of suspicion. But I still stand by my point that the way it's written, you are not the ones, the legislators are not the ones who decide, I guess I'm a little passionate about this. try not to be. But you are potentially giving up your role in requesting the Scope of Practice Review Committee be convened. And I think it's incredibly important that it stay with you.
Did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, just one last one. And I guess this, I understand the origins of the bill and why it makes people nervous. I clearly get that one. And I have a sister who is pretty tired as a nurse, and we've had conversations about this for a long time. So that's clear. But, you know, I tend to still think that Oregon is very unique and that we set trends rather than listen to trends. And I look at the way the amendments have been drafted and the way people have come together to do that, to say we aren't accepting what may be happening other places, and we're going to set a course that might be the one that leads the rest of the nation, as we have done with nurse practitioners in a lot of ways. So I see this as Oregon putting a stamp on how to get to those non-silos. And I guess I'd like to have any suggestion about that.
Representative Roblin, it's interesting to me that I don't think I've heard any of the people testifying saying we absolutely want no process. That's not the issue. The issue is trying to find a process that makes sense. And the current bill maintains the silos. Two proponents, two opponents, two neutral. surely as we make some reconsideration, if we could find a way, I mean, all of us are going to come into some group with some kind of an opinion, but to come in, profess, to be appointed specifically because you're a proponent or an opponent maintains those silos that I don't think are going to be in our best interest.
Thank you. I guess, you know, I go back to my previous experiences, and I will tell you that as a principal in a school, if I have a new policy that I want to have out, I go and find the two that are the most opposed to it and the two that are most appropriate for it, and then I ask from there for opinions, because it's the only way I get all of it on the table. If I don't have it there, questions get left unasked, and when you put the final policy in, you end up with something that doesn't quite work because you didn't get the question you wanted. And so when I see the organization as board, it's, to me, it's saying we want to make sure everything gets on the table. And if you put a whole bunch of people on the table who have no opinion, you can have all sorts of things go through. And I find that in the legislature, you know, when you get a committee and you get a bill, it gets assigned to your committee that nobody has a passion about, it's easy for it to go one way or the other depending on the best testimony. If you don't have people who are passionate on both sides, you don't get the whole thing vetted. And if you get agreement from that group, then you've probably got something that's going to work. And so I see that as being a positive, personally, when I see the board. Yeah. And I guess I'd like your opinion.
Well, for me, it's a very different issue in terms of implementing a policy and getting opinion about that policy at the point of implementation and actually developing the policy. And in this case, we're appointing a group to try to give you the best information you can to vote appropriately to make some very difficult and very complex decisions. And I think that's where I see the difference.
Okay. I was just going to point out that attached to Ms. Pelosi's testimony are some resolutions from the American Medical Association that do put them on record as wanting the licensing of nurse practitioners to move from individual licensing boards to the equivalent of the Bureau of Medical Examiners. So I think it's probably unfortunate that that national policy, together with the original version of this bill, has aroused a pretty high level of paranoia, but I do understand where that's coming from. Yes, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to point that out as well, and it's very understandable. You know, if Dr. Goldberg could set up a system, we might have, you know, some input. I trust the way he's approaching this, but that's, unfortunately, that's not what's in the Dash 13. And if I was cynical, I would look at this as a way. I have a 50-50 chance to impact scope of practice if I get one of those neutral members to come to my side. So why not go for it? Why not go after this and say, I'm going to restrict scope of practice, I need to convince one person to do it, and then I have a report that's presented to the legislature as a recommendation to do so, which will carry some weight to it. So again, I remain extremely uncomfortable with this idea. I really think we have a process that all sides buy into.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mm-hmm. We'll call Jim Thompson and Claudia Black and John McCulley.
We don't always agree with that. We hope this process will be identical and not a little bit.
Please go ahead, one of you start, and we will be timing you for 3 minutes.
Well, I'm going to be very, very brief. I'm Jim Thompson, Executive Director of the Oregon State Pharmacy Association. We are wrestling with this concept and have decided to question it, if not solidly oppose it. It's maybe not the best way to go, and maybe moving too fast in a direction that's going to create problems. I don't think there's any doubt, any of you who have worked with this process any length of time, that the various disciplines of medicine don't always agree with each other, and they certainly don't support each other. And even the point was made that we have massive shortages in all fields of medicine in this state, and it's causing a problem. In some respects, it's also causing, and I don't understand why, less cooperation instead of more, so that the stakes seem to be higher on preserving status quo and resisting change, and pharmacists are no different than any of the others on that issue. The original bill that put everything in the hands of the Board of Medical Examiners, we absolutely oppose, for the same reasons that the nurse practitioners seem to be so solidly opposed to it. A neutral commission might be more palatable, and we would certainly support an interim discussion on this before implementation. I think we're moving too fast in a direction that we don't understand the political implications of at the professional level. But we certainly need to be doing something about analyzing and working with scope of practice in this state, because it's the only way we're going to get out of the healthcare shortage, provider shortage that we have. So I guess I would go on record as saying, you know, hold back the reins on this thing, move to an interim discussion. 2 years is not a whole lot of time. At the very least, sunset it in 2 years so we can come back and have a discussion of progress if the decision is to move it forward. But we would support a neutral commission and more time. This is our position.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John McCulley, representing the Oregon Psychiatric Association. And as you probably well know, we have been involved in some discussions with psychologists regarding prescription privileges for psychologists, which our organization adamantly opposes. And, of course, that issue has come and been laid in your laps, and we believe there has to be a better way to do that discussion than sitting here in front of this, in front of you, trying to make our points, or in your individual offices doing the same thing. I have to give great credit to Senator Mona Anderson for being willing to rattle the status quo with this bill, which is certainly what she has done. And I think it is a good bill. We do support Senate Bill 717, like the Dash 13 amendments to the bill. I've been listening to a lot of discussions about having six people in the room making this decision. Well, I can tell you this session on the bill allowing psychologists to prescribe, we had six people on the fourth floor who met without public notice. The public wasn't invited, sitting around a table trying to hammer out a bill. Those discussions lasted probably a total of 4 hours. The legislature, the committee, was facing a deadline, had to move the bill. So there really was not an opportunity to have the quality input that is needed on such a complex public health issue. I have been talking to a psychologist who does prescribe medications, happens to be a family practice nurse practitioner, unable to participate in the process because of her job responsibilities, and the committee never had a chance to hear from people actually on the front lines doing what the bill was asking people to do. I think this represents a great way to get started on this process. The sunset in 2 years, or whatever the bill calls for now, I think protects people. For whatever reason, we don't get together among ourselves prior to the session. And this forces discussions to a large degree, even though it is voluntary, as has been described, and even though you will still see these same debates in the legislature. It just seems to bring some rationality to the process, and we definitely support the bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Claudia Black, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Medical Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and will keep my comments brief because you've heard a lot this morning on this bill. We support Senate Bill 717B with the Dash 13 amendments. We think that makes a lot of sense. We've been testifying from the beginning. Initially, there was some suspicion that the OMA had put forward 717. That wasn't the case. That came from, as you heard, from Senator Mona Anderson. And we were concerned a little bit about the Board of Medical Examiners and the initial bill as it was written, but with the safeguards put in, then we supported that. We support the current version. We appreciate Senator Mona Anderson's work with the various interested parties to try to make this a bill that doesn't cause a lot of concern. We believe that there are a number of safeguards, as you've heard, built into the bill, the scope of practice committee, having the proponents, opponents, and neutral parties, the participation in the review committee being strictly voluntary,
And the piece about if they reach consensus, and I would just clarify that that all members of the committee have to agree for there to be consensus, then a recommendation is written. Otherwise, it's just that the committee will refer to DHS and then on to the legislature on identification of the issues that resulted in the failure to reach consensus. And finally, the bill doesn't change how scope of practice issues are dealt with in Oregon. The legislature still makes the decision on that. We just think that there's additional information, and it would be very helpful if the law sunsets in 2 years. That gives us a chance to test it out and see how it works. We think it's important to move forward with a process. When a group originally got together to talk about this issue after the first hearing on 717, it became clear it was more difficult for us to reach consensus on what the interim task force might be versus actually a bill. And we would encourage the committee to adopt the Dash B13 amendments. We feel this approach would improve the way the scope of practice issues are settled in Oregon. Thank you.
Yes, quick, Representative Buckley.
Thank you. Quick question. I'm looking at listening to your testimony. If this institute, and if the Committee of Six was limited to reviewing a proposed expansion of scope of practice rather than any sort of change, which obviously feeds into the fears of people who feel like their scope is going to be pulled back, would you be supportive of that, the idea that the committee could only review a proposed expansion of scope of practice?
I'll start, I guess, Madam Chair, Representative Buckley. I would see this committee as being more far-reaching than that. I would support the breadth of review rather than just expansion. I'll give you a quick example. Last Friday, one of my clients is a speech-language pathologist. We had an issue with occupational therapists around swallowing. Senate Bill 135 was introduced to expand or change scope of practice, not expand, but just codify a certain scope of practice for OTs. We had a problem with the swallowing portion of that. Not necessarily an expansion, but certainly worthy of discussion. And last Friday, we had a meeting with occupational therapists and speech-language pathologists and set the stage to come up with a collaborative agreement on how to work together on that one issue. So it's not an expansion, but is an area that I think was worth discussion to just understand what the professions do. So I would be fearful of just limiting it to expansion.
Expansion or clarification? Because again, sorry if I can follow that, Chair. The fears expressed and the documentation, there's an effort to pull back on scope of practice, is a very real fear. So if we could address that fear, I think there'd be a more comfort level with the amendment.
May I respond to that as well, Madam Chair?
You can, but I see that the Sergeant in Arms is
here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have two more people signed up to testify on this bill. I suppose we can come back and hear your testimony so that we can complete our witness list, and then we'll be done with the public hearing. So the committee will stand in recess. Come back to order, and we are still in a public hearing on Senate Bill 717. We have two more witnesses. We have two more witnesses signed up to testify. I do not see Phil Donovan in the room, but hopefully he will join us before we're done, and I'll call Tracy Rattan. Tracy Rattan. Thanks for being so patient.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tracy Rattan, here today on behalf of the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. I'm here. I didn't mark down. You'll see what my position was on the bill. We are not 100% in support, though we're not opposed. In the last weeks, there's been a lot of correspondence that my association, both on the state level and national level, has received from those who I think are opposed to this bill and have a lot of fear. So I've been putting out some fires here and there and trying to hear what the arguments are on both sides. We have testified on this bill, I think, from the very beginning when it was first heard in March, and have been through that process of trying to say, well, you know, we see that there's some problems that we feel like need to be addressed with scope of practice issues. We just want to make sure that whatever it is the most fair and unbiased process that we can possibly agree to. We are one of those who are, I guess not guilty, no, guilty of having a pretty contentious scope of practice issue, as Sandy will be able to testify to, but, you know, and it wasn't pretty, and it didn't look good for, I think, either of the professions that were sitting before the committee. I don't know that it looked great for the legislative process. It was ugly, and you know, I'll just be 100% honest. I think in terms of the issue that we were dealing with, I would have some concerns if the bill was limited to expansions of scope of practice. Currently, there is nothing that would restrict somebody from trying to limit somebody's scope of practice. The issue that we've dealt with, we would consider to be a limitation of the current scope of practice of physical therapists. I think that the people on the other side might say that it's not currently in their scope of practice. So there's some question there as to whether it is or isn't in this scope of practice. And actually, we have been invited by the chiropractors to participate in this process, even though the bill hasn't passed yet. But it's an issue that we would take through this process, or we would essentially be guinea pigs. We feel comfortable with a lot of the aspects of the bill. Of course, again, we want to ensure that it's fair and that it's unbiased. But seeing that the, I guess I wouldn't even call it necessarily recommendation. If there is consensus, I see that there would be a recommendation. But if there's not a consensus, it's essentially laying out what was discussed and why there was no consensus. For us, that makes us feel pretty comfortable. I'd also say that, you know, we believe that the process still is in place. I've heard a lot of testimony saying, you know, the legislative process does not remain in place. Well, the way I see it, people could still bring a bill forward. I think that this is maybe more of a tool that the legislature can use in making decisions. I think if somebody is unhappy with the process, I can guarantee you that they will be before the committee, and they will still be voicing their concerns on the outcome of the process or whatever issues. I don't think that this is going to prohibit somebody from bringing forward issues before the legislative committee. I guess I will wrap up my testimony, be short and brief, and say, you know, we don't know what the perfect process is, but we're willing to try something. We feel like something needs to be done. We feel that these issues are contentious. We feel like when they get before the committee, oftentimes the committee hears one side, and then they hear a 180-degree different side. I don't envy you for trying to figure out what's the truth, what's fact, what's, you know, what's biased or not. So I would say that we are supportive to try this process, and that we would be open to participating in this process in the interim and plan to do so should the bill pass.
Thank you for your testimony. Good morning.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, my name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Naturopathic Physicians. Just, you know, you've heard a lot of testimony, so I want to hit 3 points very quickly. First off, I want to acknowledge Senator Monis Anderson's work on the legislation itself, and I want to share with you what I shared with her, which is, you know, when the bill was brought out, we had a very fundamental concern about the barrier to scope of practice issues that we thought this presented. And, you know, we've referenced the MLAC process, and the MLAC process, frankly, is one that is difficult to navigate. And that may be the way you want it, because of scope of practice issues to workers' compensation. But I do want to suggest to you all that oftentimes it's been articulated about an interest in opening up scope of practice issues to help address serious health care needs in a variety of communities, both urban and rural, throughout the state of Oregon. And we're concerned that this will add a layer of bureaucracy. And to use MLAC as an example, you know that that is challenging at best to get anything done in. Having said that, our other fundamental concern with the legislation was its original housing in the Board of Medical Examiners. And I appreciate the work that Senator Monis Anderson has gone to try and address the concerns that we've raised in previous committees. And so I don't want to gloss over that, because quite honestly, when you go to a champion of legislation and you ask them to make changes and they are responsive to it, it's very difficult to come back and say you continue to oppose it. And that's why I want to just basically go on the record today to talk about our concerns. And that leads me to the second point. Don't sell yourself short. Now, you can look at the legislative process and be critical of it, but if you judge yourself by the product and you look at our naturopathic medicine laws, we're a model for the country. You've done yourselves well in opening up to naturopathic medicine. And so I don't want to suggest that this process is broken. It is cumbersome, even for advocates, and it's difficult for you to sit in the middle, but that's why we pay you the big bucks.
The third.
Good answer.
I can't wait to see you in front of that. The third point is that I want to talk about what we would want to see accomplished if we were to consider this in the interim, whether it be a work group or by the committee, and it's twofold. First off, the process we've talked about: proponents, opponents, and neutral. Two things on that score. First off, you know, what you've got in the Dash 13 is a bit of a free-for-all. They're going to put a call out, everybody shows up, and they try and pick the parties out of that process. Well, assuming that that probably is going to break down if a bunch of proponents and opponents show up, then it punts it to the Institute to make the decision as to who is going to be suitable opponents and who's going to be suitable neutral party. And, you know, first off, we're concerned that whether those people would be philosophically opposed. We're also concerned about whether they even understand the concepts that are being debated. And let me give you a real-life experience that you're probably all familiar with, and that is the writing of a ballot measure summary. In a ballot measure summary, two opponents, two proponents, and a neutral party is chosen by the Secretary of State to draft a document that is then put into the voter's pamphlet for ballot measures. If you follow that process, you don't always end up with the best possible product. You end up with something in the middle. Why don't I cut my testimony short? And let me just say the last concern that we have is around the issue of the evidence-based research as available that's listed in the Dash 13s. I have heard a lot of concerns from naturopathic physicians that those studies have a conventional medicine bias. If we were to work on this in the interim, I want to pull down what's off the shelf. I want to see what's available, and let's have that conversation as to whether that's an appropriate measurement. With that, I'll close. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Unfortunately, we are under a call of the House, so we don't have time for questions. Thank you both for your testimony. And I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 717, and committee is adjourned.